report, Mr. Steve Maxwell will represent the appellant, and Mr. John Cox will represent the athlete.
Mr. Maxwell.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. I know what you're all thinking. If Steve Maxwell's up here, this case must involve incredibly simple issues, and actually it does. The case is based on the granting of a summary judgment in County Court at Law Number 2, and very briefly, the facts of this case are that on July the 17th of 2009, a driver by the name of Sarah Berthasell jumped the curb, hit a vehicle owned by my client Carlina Ibarra, and then careened off that car and into her house, causing almost $50,000 worth of damage. The $25,000 liability policy owned by Mrs. Berthasell was tendered fairly quickly, and this claim was made under Ms. Ibarra's policy of underinsured motorist coverage. The first issue I want to touch on is a very brief point. The summary judgment was granted by Judge Rimmel. I believe that a call was made from her clerk to advise both Mr. Cox and myself of the fact that that had happened, and I'm assuming Mr. Cox, since the judgment was granted in his favor, was told to prepare an order. I did not get to see that order, never got a chance to review it. It was submitted to the court, and in fact, by the time the signed order got into my office, I remember there being some problem with the time of this. At any rate, the order basically addressed issues that were not covered in the summary judgment. The order basically dismissed all of my case, despite the fact that there was damage to Ms. Ibarra's vehicle, which would have very specifically been covered under the property damage portion of the UIM policy.
But they've conceded that part of the case, correct?
More or less. I think there was an argument that I saw in the brief to the effect that we didn't raise certain fact issues, but how can we raise fact issues when that was never anything that was raised in the original motion for summary judgment? But you're right, and I don't want to really spend any time on that. I think that states fairly obviously what our position is. Let's go on to the next part. The more important part about this is the damage that was sustained to the house is really not in question here, almost $50,000. The question is, does a UM policy, the property damage portions of that policy, apply to something that happens like that? I'm actually amazed there is so little authority on this. Of course, usually you would have a homeowner's policy that would take care of that, but we didn't have that here. Now, where we come from, and I've got this in the brief, I'm reading directly from the Texas Insurance Code, section 1952.101B. Underinsured motorist coverage must provide for payment to the insured of all amounts that the insured is legally entitled to recover as damages from owners or operators of underinsured motor vehicles. Now, it doesn't qualify that.
We've all read the briefs. We know where everybody's mm-hmm. coming. How do you address the property damage definition?
Well, that's
on page 18. Are you just saying that that's not in conformance with the directive of the insurance code?
Exactly. And here's the point, and this is what makes this such an interesting situation. That's the way the statute reads. Now, the insurance company writes an insurance policy, provides a contract with the insurer, but it sets out different definitions. It says, well, we're going to restrict property damage to the way we define it, and that is it only applies to a covered vehicle or property that may be in that vehicle and not to the situation that you're raising. My position is, and as I've stated in the brief, that's not proper. That's because the insurance code and the legislature and its intent set out that underinsured motorist coverage means exactly that. Ms. Berthasell did not have sufficient insurance to pay for the damage her negligent actions caused. That's what underinsured motorist coverage is all about.
So the language of the policy was improperly approved?
The language of the policy went beyond what the intent of the legislation and what the statute says, yes.
I mean, obviously, the standard policy language is approved.
That's true. It is.
And so it was improperly written and improperly approved because it's outside what you've termed to be the clear language of the statute.
That's exactly what the point of this appeal is, yes.
Right. Okay.
And that's really it. I told them I wasn't going to spend a lot of time because it is a fairly simple issue. So I will.
It's a fairly simple issue that hasn't been decided by any court that you can really
my My very talented friend John Cox will raise some cases, one in particular, the Goudreau case, I believe it is, that seems to touch on an issue that, but it's distinguishable. And I'll let him talk about that. And then in my rebuttal, I'm going to tell you why I think it is distinguishable. But basically, Justice Gabriel, that's right. There are no cases directly to point. I think if there had been, we probably wouldn't be here right now.
Well, that way he won't have a chance to refute your rebuttal.
That's right.
And let me make a factual clarification. The vehicle that went out of control, it first hit Ms. Ibarra's car in the driveway?
Yes.
Okay, then which vehicle went into the house, actually?
It was Ms. Berthasell's vehicle that ran into the house.
Okay. I was trying to connect some dots there, if possible. Okay.
Okay.
Does that make a difference in your mind?
You know, I thought long and hard about whether or not the fact that the vehicle, which nobody is disputing, would be covered under the definition of property damage in the UIM policy, was kind of sequentially connected to the damage to the house, but I actually don't really think so. I mean, I've got to be honest about that. Not the way that this thing is defined under that contract of insurance, because it says damage to a covered vehicle.
Thank you, Mr. Maxwell. Mr. Cox.
Yes.
Can you further enlighten us, please?
Well, I'll try to, and be absolutely shut me down if you think I'm being redundant. Thank you. May it please the court, justices. You know, I think the reason why there are no cases on the books in this area is because this is just almost kind of something that is inherently understood, that auto insurance, by virtue of the way the statutes are written and the way the policies are written, cover automobiles. They don't cover homes. And in this case, we had an instance where a woman, a tortfeasor, struck an automobile and a home. And Mr. Maxwell's client recovered from her auto insurer, the tortfeasor's auto insurer, Liberty Mutual, $25,000.
An automobile policy is going to cover more than property damage.
Well, the property damage is
cover people.
And it can cover people.
Well, if it covers people, that's not an automobile, so why would it not cover other property?
Well, it does cover people, Justice.
Other property's closer to an auto than people.
It covers people, and it covers certain forms of property that are agreed within the contract between the insurer and the insured that the premium is based upon.
That follows the insurance code.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And we believe that this policy, I'm jumping over to another issue, but that this policy followed the Texas Department of Insurance forms. It was approved by, and I'm forgetting the name of the acronym right now, but the entity that approves insurance policies.
I don't think there's any question today that the policy written between the insurance company and the insured doesn't cover the house. I don't think there's any question that the insurance policy that we have here was approved. The sole question is, does it follow the language of the statute?
And
that's where we got to go.
And
we can't talk about, well, we know in general that just general usage is it doesn't cover it. I think we got to look at this language and make a decision. Does it follow the language of the statute we're all looking at and talking about?
And we would say that it certainly does, because the statute does not state, we've cited some cases in our brief in the area of UIM law where, you know, there are instances where the courts in the past have looked at things such as whether or not the term occupying, whether or not occupying is proper term to exclude certain types of events from coverage. And
let me ask it this way. If the driver of the vehicle that drove into the house, if her policy limits had been $100,000, we wouldn't be here, because her auto insurance would have paid for the damage to that person's house.
Justice, I would say that if her auto insurance did that, someone made a mistake at her auto insurance company.
So you're saying it wouldn't cover the house?
I'm saying that it would not, because I'm saying that if you look at these policies, and in this case it's a UIM, so this is a direct claim by a policyholder against her insurance carrier, Progressive. And for the UIM risks in that policy, it is very specifically stated what type of property is covered for UIM.
But we're not concerned about it. We all agree the policy as written doesn't cover this incident. I don't think Mr. Maxwell is espousing that point of view. Are you espousing that point of view, Mr. Maxwell? No. That's off the table.
Okay.
I mean, just the question is, does the policy follow the statute? What not was it approved? What does it say? As far as the agreement between the parties, does it follow the statute?
I think that it does follow the statute, and I think that if you follow Mr. Maxwell's line of reasoning, then a policy like this ensures all risks. If you're going to look at that one word, all, and you're going to base your argument on that, then any insurance policy would ensure all risks, and that prevents people like us from being able to have insurance, because insurance is based upon known risks from which a premium can be set and determined and a price charged. We all know that about our homeowners insurance. We know it about our auto insurance. We elect different things when we take out insurance. We elect to insure a certain vehicle, and if we choose not to insure one of our vehicles we have garaged at our house, and then our son decides to take it out in the middle of the night and drive it, that may not be covered because it has been agreed within the policy that it's a risk that's not insured. This reasoning that the word all in the statute somehow means that you must insure all risks is against public policy in and of itself, because it goes against the basic tenet of what insurance is, which does have to be based upon the setting of risks, the determining of risks, and then the charging of an appropriate premium for those agreed risks.
Well, if I take my car out from the parking garage underneath the courthouse today and drive it down the road, okay, what am I covered for if I run into? Am I covered if I run into another car?
I believe you would be.
Would I run into a person?
I believe you would be.
What if I run into a house?
If you run into a house, I think the language of your insurance policy would dictate what is a covered loss. And I would say that, and in this case, we're talking about you making a claim against your own carrier.
I fully understand that.
And in this case, it would be dictated by what's defined in the policy as to what types of property are covered for loss. In this case, it was automobile, contents in the automobile, and contents owned by a relative.
You haven't answered my question. It's a standard automobile policy approved, and it would cover if I ran into a house. So I'm not appreciating the distinction. I mean, I'm hearing you about known risks, and I mean, I'm hearing you. But that's the very same thing on my automobile policy. They're having to cover the fact that I might run into a house.
Justice,
I might run into a business and they might be out of business.
I would disagree that under most automobile policies, if I run into a house, my automobile policy is paying for the let's say I run into a business and it causes $500,000 in damages to that business. My understanding of my automobile policy is it doesn't pay for that. It pays for the damages to vehicles. I mean, there's clearly definitions. That business should have insurance coverage that covers that piece of real property. And if they have to pay out and they feel there's a tortfeasor responsible, they have rights of subrogation to go against that tortfeasor separately for those risks that they assess, such as this is a building, the owner's insuring it, and a car might run into it someday. So that's, or a tornado might hit it someday, or lightning might strike it someday. We go to our homeowners insurers to seek remuneration, or our property insurers for real property to seek remuneration in those instances, and they do have rights to subrogate against tortfeasors and go back and recover what they have paid out. In this instance, it would seem apparent that Ms. Burseal probably did not have any form of insurance on her home, and they are trying to strap it into a UIM case through the automobile.
But if all the policies are described, an owner's individual policy, are described in that manner, then I, as a potential tortfeasor, have no ability to insure the risk that my vehicle is going to injure some property that's outside of my vehicle, is what you're saying.
Well, I think within the policy itself, it defines what type of property it will pay for your vehicle injuring, and that's guided by the definitions, which this policy clearly had. As it regards Ms. Ibarra now going to her, she's going against her auto carrier for a 1984 Cadillac that was worth $2,000. Their pleadings stated, in the pleadings itself, it stated she had a $2,000 vehicle that was totaled, and she was paid $25,000 by the tortfeasor for that damage. I mean, the pleading itself would imply that she has been made whole for her auto and for that property that's covered within the policy itself. The issue then becomes, okay, her house was damaged as well. Can she claim against her own automobile insurance carrier that she paid $181 risk for that Cadillac, for that 1984 Cadillac? She's paid $181 to insure it. Can she now go against Progressive and try and recover what is essentially the full value of her home? The plaintiff's allegation was that it needs to be knocked down. It's a 900-square-foot home. It needs to be knocked down and made new.
All right, your time has expired.
Okay.
Right, thank you, Mr. Cox.
Thank you. Thank you, Justice.
Mr. Maxwell, rebuttal.
Thank you. And again, may it please the Court. I respectfully disagree with Mr. Cox in terms of his discussion about the scope of insurance policies. Liability insurance coverage does indeed apply not only to bodily injury, damage to the car, but if Justice McCoy drives his car into a building, that's what he has liability coverage for, to pay for the consequences of his negligent actions. Now, if he is operating his Maserati offline someplace, out in the country on a dirt road where he's not supposed to be, then I could see the insurance company claiming some kind of restriction to the coverage, but not in this case. Where I think the argument has gotten off track is he's saying we should not have insurance policies that cover all foreseeable risks. It's not risk that I'm talking about here. It's damages, exactly as those are specified in the statute. Now, so what we have and what this case really comes down to, this is an argument on the one side. On Mr. Cox's side, shouldn't an insurance company be free to contract and the person with whom they contract is bound by the terms of that contract? Or the argument on our side, which is they should be free to contract so long as they follow the dictates of the statute. The contract that Progressive had with my client, Ms. Ibarra, stated the property damage defined in the terms that you've heard in this case. The problem is those terms do not fit the statute. That makes this case unique. That is an issue that has never been taken up on appeal that I could find any place where the terms of the contract not following what the statute dictates are questioned. And that's what this case is about.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Maxwell. Thank you, Mr. Cox. We appreciate your arguments and your briefing today.
Thank you.
Your case is submitted, and you all are excused.